Representative Tammy Duckworth talks about her legislative priorities if she won the U.S. Senate seat in Illinois.
As I travel the state, I'm hearing the same things over and over again, and that is they hear that the economy is growing, but people don't see that the economy is picking up in their hometown. The issue that I've been focusing on is the need to really invest in Illinois manufacturing.
We'll also talk with two county clerks about what they're doing to ensure this Tuesday's elections run smoothly. Here's McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael.
As everyone knows, there's just been more attention brought to the election machines and the process than ever before. And that's why we just believe election authorities be as transparent as possible.
Plus, we'll meet a Chicago family brought together by mariachi and folk music. We talk to the Cielito Lindo family band. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Welcome to the 21st, this Friday before Election Day. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The race for the U.S. Senate in Illinois is one of the most closely watched in the country. Incumbent Republican Mark Kirk is facing off against his Democratic opponent, Representative Tammy Duckworth. Tonight, the two of them face off in our final debate in Chicago. We had a chance to speak with Representative Duckworth earlier. Representative Duckworth, thank you so much for joining us.
So great to be on. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start by asking you, Representative, the Peoria Journal Star endorsed Senator Mark Kirk. In part, they said because you didn't respond to their request for an interview. But they also said, and this is what I wanted you to respond to, they said that they don't think you care to represent anyone outside of Cook County. How would you respond to that?
Well, I've been traveling the state like you wouldn't believe, and that's one newspaper's editorial board's opinion. I certainly have been endorsed all over the state. I've been traveling all over the state. In fact, they didn't realize my deep roots to Peoria. In fact, my National Guard Battalion headquarters for about 15 years of my military service was out of Peoria. So the job is to be senator for the entire state of Illinois, and I represent actually most of my congressional district is outside of Cook County itself. And the people across Illinois need someone who's going to work hard for them every single day, and they don't have that in the incumbent. There's someone who's not traveled Illinois. It's Mark Kirk. He's not, had offices across the state, and he certainly has not been representing the needs of the people all across this great state.
I wonder, Representative, what are you hearing from people outside of Chicago about what issues are most important to them?
Well, as I travel the state, I'm hearing the same things over and over again, and that is they hear that the economy is growing. And it may be in Chicago where you've got financial services industries, but really in the rest of the state, people don't see that the economy is picking up in their hometown. In Bloomington, we launched a Mitsubishi plant. Peoria, Caterpillar is looking to build, they have built a new factory in Malaysia, potentially shifting at least 1,000 jobs from Peoria to Malaysia. And when you go down to Granite City, I was just in Granite City 2 days ago, the steel mill shut down and laid off people 2 days after last Christmas. People don't see that the economy is growing in the rest of Illinois, and they want someone who's going to stand up for Illinois manufacturing and small and medium businesses that keep jobs right here in our state, and I intend to do that.
Now, Representative, you've served in the U.S. House of Representatives representing Illinois' 8th Congressional District in West Suburban Chicago since 2013. And as we've seen congressional approval rates at historic lows, I think it's around 11%. We've seen how much the House in particular has been criticized for the very bitter partisan atmosphere, complete lack of inaction on gun control, immigration reform, just to name a few issues. What would you say to people who say, why should we trust someone from the House of Representatives to represent me now in the U.S. Senate?
Well, I hope people will look at my record. And the fact is, I passed legislation, even as a freshman, I passed legislation that saved taxpayers billions of dollars and how the Department of Defense goes about buying uniforms. My piece of legislation will save taxpayers over $4.3 billion in 5 years. The work that I did with veterans in terms of the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention Act, which was signed into law even when I was in my second year in Congress, that was bipartisan. I'm very proud of that. I have co-sponsored legislation that has passed, including the ABLE Act, which will allow families of people with disabilities to put pre-tax dollars away like you do for a 529 college savings plan, but this money would be allowing you to put that money away for your children or yourself if you have a disability. So just look at my track record. You'll see it's been one of not just bipartisanship, but also accomplishing real work for the people that I represent, and I intend to do that for the entire state when I get to the Senate.
We're just about to your last debate. We've heard so much this election cycle about how little actual issues are being discussed. And I'm just thinking about the uproar over what Senator Kirk said about your family and your military record in the last debate, or the issues being raised in ads funded by both your campaign and his. In this final debate, to your mind, what issue hasn't gotten enough attention?
Well, I think the issue that I've been focusing on as I traveled around the state, which is the need to really invest in Illinois manufacturing. I think that we should be leading a nationwide renaissance when it comes to manufacturing, especially when you look at green energies, carbon neutral manufacturing, things such as windmill components. We have significant manufacturers of windmills, parts here in Illinois. We have our corn and soybean and our farmers. We should be leading a real renaissance in research in terms of biofuels. We have nuclear power plants and the Fermi lab and Argonne lab, both of which can really help us push the envelope when it comes to cleaner nuclear fuel. So I've really been trying to focus on that. I want to talk about those issues, that if we would just invest in Illinois and in companies that keep jobs here, we can really grow our economy from the middle out and make sure that hardworking families here have a good shot at the American dreams themselves, because they'll be able to find a good job.
How tough is that to get people to invest in Illinois when we see the state legislature in such dysfunction and so many companies saying that they're not clear about the fiscal status of the state, or they look at the state's credit rating? How tough do you think it is to balance that?
Well, this is where we have to work at both the federal and the local level. One of the things that I want to do that I think will be helpful is to pass a national infrastructure investment bill that will bring hard federal dollars into the state, all across the state. You can't just fix one little portion of a railroad track, you've got to fix the entire line. You can't just fix part of 55 and not do, the rest of the interstate. You can't just fix part of the Mississippi's locks and dams, you've got to do all of them. And so I think that we can pass that, we can get those hard federal dollars into the state. But again, those monies come through the state, and then the state has to pony out some of the state matching funds as well. And this is where I look forward to working with legislators on both sides of the aisle at the state level. I have an experience working with them from when I was at the IDVA, Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm working with bipartisan legislators, and I'd love to be able to continue to make sure that whatever I can do to bring federal dollars into the state, that they get executed in a timely manner so that Illinois does not lose out on those dollars that will go to other states.
Is that your top priority then, if elected?
Yep, the infrastructure bill, yes. I think that is one of those things that we can do within the first 100 days. It's something that is bipartisan. It is something that everybody needs across the state. So it doesn't matter whether you are red counties or blue counties, everyone needs infrastructure improvement.
I wanted to ask you about open enrollment for people seeking health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. That actually began this week, and news about Obamacare hasn't been good. Costs going up on average a 40% increase for the lowest tier plans in Illinois. And we know that the number of insurance providers have gone down. Also, in some parts of Illinois, there's only one option. I know this is something that's really top for a lot of people's minds, health insurance, health coverage. To your mind, what needs to change in the system to make affordable insurance available, which is what I think was promised at the beginning of ACA and what many people were expecting?
Right. So there's a couple things that can be done that have bipartisan solutions. One of them that's causing the cost to go up is the fact that people are actually buying into the marketplace, they're buying the insurance knowing that they're going to have significant medical conditions that have to be taken care of. And, for example, they know they need gallbladder surgery. So they sign up, and then they have the surgery, but then they drop the insurance plan within the 3-month grace period of open enrollment. What that has made is the amount of people in the plan to be artificially high who are sicker. If you close the loophole and said that if you buy into the plan, you have significant health issues within the first 3 months during the open enrollment period, then you must keep your health insurance for the rest of the year. You can't just drop it. If you just close that loophole, it would actually spread the cost out over the cost of the year, and you would not have this artificial phenomenon that's happening where the people who are in the plan are much sicker than were expected, but actually you would prorate the cost over the year. And that's one of the bipartisan solutions that's been come up that will help to lower those rates. The other is more of a state issue, and that is Illinois is one of those states that does not force the insurance companies to justify why they're increasing the insurance rate. Insurance companies in other states have to justify to the insurance commission, the state insurance commission, why the costs are going up. Illinois, on the other hand, it's just a file and raise state. That is, the insurance company just tells the state and say, all right, we're going to raise it 40%, but then they don't have to justify it, and the state doesn't actually come back and say, no, you're not allowed to do that. You only justified a 10% increase, or whatever that increase would be. Other states have that power, and we don't in Illinois, and that's one of those things I would love to work with my state legislature partners in working to fix as well.
Tammy Duckworth is running for the office of U.S. Senate. She currently is in the U.S. House of Representatives. Thank you so much for being with us, Representative.
It's my pleasure to be on. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. For the first time in a presidential election, Illinois residents will be able to register to vote on the same day as the election. We wanted to help explain all that you need to bring with you and how you can register to vote on Election Day. To answer all of those questions, we're joined by Ami Gandhi, Director of Voting Rights for the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights in Chicago. Ami, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you explain, if you're not registered to vote in Illinois, what happens if you want to find a same-day registration poll? What's the process going to be like?
Anyone in Illinois and across the country who has questions about registration and voting should definitely call our nonpartisan voter protection hotline at 866-OUR-VOTE, and we can look up the person's information, walk them through exactly when and where they can register. And in Illinois, Election Day registration is available. It's a part of our law. It's required in every single county. Depending on which county the voter lives in, Election Day registration may be available at many different places or at all polling places in that county, or in some other locations, Election Day registration may be more limited. So it really comes down to which county the voter lives in. And again, we're happy to help voters figure that out over the phone.
We'll tweet out that link so everyone has that phone number. We'll have that on our website as well. So what do you need to bring with you if you need to, if you're going to do same day registration? What should you bring with you? What kind of documents?
People who are registering for the first time and using Election Day registration need to bring two forms of identification, and one of them needs to have the person's current address on it. Most people who are using Election Day registration are doing so because they have moved recently and they're correcting a previous registration. But then there are some people who are just brand new to the voting process. They're eligible to vote and want to get involved for the first time, which is amazing. And Election Day registration has been an excellent tool for many of our communities. So people wanting to take advantage of that option need to bring two forms of identification with them, with at least one having their current address. So for a lot of people, that is a state ID or driver's license with a current address, as well as something like a credit card or a piece of mail that they've received that could actually serve as the second form of ID. And it's important to remember that usually in Illinois, we don't need an identification in order to vote. We are not a voter ID state. People typically are not going to need an ID in order to vote, but that exception is there for people who are registering for the first time.
So if you're registering for the first time, and I want to, it's interesting you say you don't need an ID to vote, because we got a voicemail from someone who asked, who had a situation where she was asked to provide her ID at a polling place actually in Champaign. Is that not supposed to, are you not supposed to, what are your rights as a voter if you're already registered? Do you have to show a photo ID?
Usually voters do not need to show a photo ID when voting, and it's important to know for Illinois voters that's also the case with early voting. We're seeing a huge turnout of voters all across the state showing up for early voting, and for many people that's a convenient way to bypass the crowds and the stress of Election Day. And we've had a change in our state law, and currently people don't need an ID in order to do early voting, and that's true all across the state. We have, again, our nonpartisan voter protection hotline, 866-OUR-VOTE. We also have been receiving those types of calls from voters who have improperly been asked to produce an ID during early voting. We've talked to county clerks, we've talked to election judges and election officials to remind them of the current law. We've talked to voters as well to let them know about their rights, and it's really important that we all recognize that people in Illinois can't early vote without a photo ID, and they certainly can vote on the day of the election without a photo ID if they're properly registered.
So, I mean, what would you do in that situation if you're a voter and they say you can't vote because you don't have your photo ID? What should you say to people?
Voters should talk to the election judge at their polling place and definitely be polite and constructive, but also make sure that they ask any questions that they need to in order to understand what's going on. We also will have hundreds of legal volunteers as part of our nonpartisan voter protection effort actually at the polls in the city of Chicago and many of the surrounding counties. And we recommend for voters to also call upon a nonpartisan poll watcher to give information about voters' rights if you happen to see someone at your polling place in your region. Otherwise, you can always reach us by phone. And we also have materials on our website, 866-OUR-VOTE.org/state/IL, and that provides a really simple guide for people about what they need to bring to the polls, what they don't need to bring, what their rights are, when and where they can vote, and other links that are really handy.
Amy, we just have less than a minute left. I know you take calls from people on this hotline all the time. Any final words of advice you have for people if they're doing early voting this weekend or people who are heading to the polls on Tuesday?
A lot of people have been calling us with questions about accessing the polls if they have a barrier because of a language issue, because of an English proficiency issue or disability. People who are eligible to vote, who are citizens, are able to vote regardless of whether they're comfortable in English, regardless of whether they're comfortable using a traditional ballot process. And so we're happy to answer any questions about that so that people fully avail themselves of their right to vote, no matter what their background is. And we also are getting a lot of questions from people of all backgrounds about mail-in ballots. If people have received a mail-in ballot but prefer to vote in person, there is an avenue to do that. If people thought that they should have received a mail-in ballot but did not receive it, it's not too late to still take advantage of the right to vote.
Thanks for that, Amy. I'm afraid we're out of time, but I appreciate it. You're listening to 21st Stay Tuned. We're going to continue this conversation.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, showing and preserving significant collections and digitally archiving irreplaceable information so that it is forever accessible to students, faculty, and the community at large. The University Library at Illinois.
For tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about voting. We want to answer your questions about what rights you have as a voter. We've got two clerks who were in with us. We've been talking to Ami Gandhi as well. She's the Director of Voting Rights and Civic Empowerment with the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. She's been sharing with us a nonpartisan hotline that has been set up to answer all of your questions now and up until and on voting day. If you have questions, by the way, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21STShow. That's our handle. I mean, we just ran out of time just before the break. I just wanted to, any final words of advice? I know you've got to run in a minute, but just in terms of knowing what your rights are as a voter on election day, any final thoughts?
I wanted to mention, I know that there is a lot of rhetoric, a lot of concern in the media and in our conversations with family and friends about how safe and secure the voting process is. And I just wanted to mention that many voters we talk to, and actually the nonpartisan research shows that voters of any background, regardless of which party they support, regardless of which presidential candidate they're planning to vote for, are feeling overall positively about the integrity and the safety and security of our voting systems. That's the case in Illinois and across the country. We appreciate that. We appreciate voters hanging in there during this intense time and taking advantage of the right to vote.
Thanks for that. That's Ami Gandhi. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time on this very busy time of year for us. And speaking of people who are really busy, we've got two other folks who this is the busiest time of year for them. Two county clerks. Gordy Holton's in studio with me with Champaign County, on the line with us from McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael. Both of you, thank you so much for taking the time to join us now.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
And as you know, as Ami was talking about in terms of questions about voter fraud, how secure the election was going to be. Let me start by asking you guys just a couple questions about that, if we could. Gordy, let's start with you. How does it work? How are votes counted? Are they counted by hand? Are they counted by computer? How does it work in Champaign County?
In Champaign County, we use paper ballots exclusively, whether you vote early or on election day or vote by mail. And those paper ballots are optical scans, so you fill in an oval. They're fed into a tabulator that will then read where you marked the ovals. Those tabulators have secured memory cards, and after the polls close on election night, we read the results off of those memory cards.
And are those memory cards ever transmitted electronically?
Our machines are old enough that they are never connected to the internet. So if someone wanted to hack our voting system itself, they'd need to stand next to it with a laptop computer and be plugged into it, and I'm pretty sure we would notice.
Okay. Kathy, how does it work in McLean County? And you run for McLean County. Kathy, you're in charge of everything but the city of Bloomington. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have two election authorities here. It's been this way for about 100 years, and it works out well. We do the same, similar as Champaign County and Gordy. We do have paper ballots as well at each of the polling places, or paper ballots and electronic touchscreens at each polling place as well, so the voters have their choice there. And it's the same thing. We deliberately don't go online to transmit anything just for security reasons. And it's the same situation. It would be very, very difficult to hack into anything or cause voter fraud. Not to say that that might never happen on occasion, but those folks would be committing a felony.
And I know that you recently, McLean County, actually had what's called a public test of its election equipment. What does that mean?
Well, that's mandated, actually, for every election authority in the state of Illinois and probably in the country, where you have to publicize when the public test is going to be so that the public and media can attend. And we just had ours last week, and we did have, for the first time ever that I can remember, someone actually attended. It's relatively boring, but you get to watch the procedure of how the machines work on election day, how they're counted. You can question the election vendor who is there. And so it's a real open, transparent process. And we're actually glad that more light was shed on that this time for all the hubbub and social media going around, because it makes people aware that they can come in and see how these things actually work, how the votes are actually counted, and how they balance and are secure.
And Gordy, how does it work in Champaign? Same thing?
Every jurisdiction does a pre-election test. We did ours on the 5th of October. And again, that's open to the public and to the media and to candidates. We also do, every jurisdiction does a post-election audit. So the State Board of Elections will randomly select 5% of our machines and our ballots. And about a week after the election, we run those ballots through the same machines that counted them the first time to ensure that they're counting the same ballots the same way and generating the same results. If there's any discrepancy at all between the election day count and the retabulation count, we have to come up with a justification for why.
Have you had discrepancies?
Occasionally we do. Almost always it's because a voter marked a ballot creatively. They used a blue pen or they made a flamboyant X or a check mark, which causes the tabulator to read their vote inconsistently.
And what do you guys do? Gordy, let me start with you. Kathy, if you can go next. What about early voting or mail-in votes? Do you match signatures? Are they, when you have to sign a signature for a mail-in ballot, does that get matched by a computer or does a person match that? How does that work?
So in Illinois, photo ID is not required to vote. So for the vast majority of voters, we use signature verification to check their identity. And that's the same on election day or early voting or voting by mail. If you vote by mail, you're required to sign a certification envelope. And when it comes back to our office, we match that against the signature that you provided when you registered. Same thing fundamentally on election day or early voting. It's just that our judges use laptops at those locations and the signatures are on the laptops.
Kathy, how about you guys?
It's the same. Mm-hmm. That's the Illinois law. It is a law, my personal opinion, that is very archaic and needs to be changed. And the one example I use all the time you know, we only require the signature as ID. Match up as a lady that had a stroke. She went into the polling place. The judges didn't know her, and she hadn't brought any other ID. And her signature did not match, and they went by the law and didn't allow her to vote. Mm. And she called my office, and I asked, why didn't you vote provisionally? And she goes, she was too humiliated. Mm. So I think there needs to be some exceptions or some changes in that law. But for right now in Illinois, they only go by matching the signatures.
I do want to talk about provisional ballots, but I just want to go back to that notion of the photo ID. And we actually had someone who, we got a voicemail from someone who lived in the Champaign-Urbana for 10 years when she was as a student at the U of I. And she called to share this experience about voting in 2008 in Savoy.
I was sort of looked upon with a little distaste and general suspicion. And I guess I should add, I'm Indian American. I was born and raised here, but my parents are from India, and I look Indian, of course. But when I got up to the table to get my name crossed off the list and get my ballot, I was definitely approached by one woman who was sitting at the desk in her McCain Palin t-shirt, and she asked me for my ID. And the young man, who is also an election judge sitting next to her, said, you see, she's voted before. She's not required to show it. And, of course, I was given my ballot, and I voted. The next time I voted in the presidential election, the same woman was there. And that was in 2012. And she actually approached me while I was waiting in the line. And the polling place at the time didn't really have any other minority voters in there. It was just me, and there's a lot of Caucasian people there. And the election judge actually was this time walking around, and she approached me again in her Romney Ryan t-shirt, and she asked me if I had my ID with me. And I replied, yes, I do, but I didn't produce it because I was pretty sure I didn't have to. It was clear that the other people in the line were sort of surprised that I didn't pull out my ID at the time, almost like I was being difficult, but the whole experience definitely made me feel really nervous whenever I go vote, even though I know it's my right.
So that was Sam. She lives in Michigan. She spent 10 years in Champaign-Urbana, and she called us to share her experience. I wanted to ask, there's a couple questions I wanted to ask there about, first of all, before we even get to the photo ID, Gordy, you were shaking your head a couple times during as she's sharing that. Are election judges allowed to wear T-shirts showing which candidates they support?
Not only are election judges not allowed to wear T-shirts showing which candidates they support, voters are not. Poll watchers are not.
So that, she could not. That person would not have been an election judge or a poll watcher.
Or a poll watcher. And so that makes me sort of wonder about the veracity of the entire story. If she was viewed suspiciously in her polling place, I'm obviously terribly sorry she felt that way. But I'm wondering how much embellishment there is if she's claiming that an election judge at two consecutive elections was wearing a campaign T-shirt for one candidate or another, because that's strictly forbidden.
So you're saying that no one is allowed to be wearing any kind of campaign. Where's the rule for where campaigning is allowed? What's the boundary?
No electioneering within 100 feet of a voting location.
Which is normally you can tell. And Kathy, you can normally tell that when you're walking up to a polling place where the line is, right? Because all the signs normally go up to a specific point.
And if voters show up with a T-shirt on or a button or a hat, the election judges will ask them to remove it or to cover it up so that they don't influence anybody else who's in the voting location.
And so what happens, Kathy, I don't know if you've ever had this, if anyone's ever called to say this, like if someone asks you to show an ID, what are you supposed to say? I wonder what you say as a clerk to people if they've called and had similar complaints.
We've never had the complaint ever. And let me go back to not to say that we don't ever make mistakes or things don't happen, but just a reminder that sometimes, you know, you've taken, and I'm like Gordy, I am hesitant to believe the veracity of the lady's story. She sounded like a very honest, nice person. But things like that just simply, I don't want to say they can't happen, but remember, you have Republican and Democratic judges there. You possibly have the Attorney General's office sitting there. You have poll watchers sitting there. It simply isn't allowed to be strutting around with a political shirt on. We have our judges. Every once in a while, people get excited, you know, and forget that they've got one on, and they are always asked very nicely, because they've forgotten, go in the bathroom, turn it inside out, or, you know, and come back in, and they always do. But about the signage, you know, they are clearly marked by the judges and taped. They have a measuring tape, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, they go out and measure the 100 feet and put the signs there that no politicking.
And about
Pretty
the photo ID,
process.
Gordy, in the case of someone, if someone's asked to show their photo ID, what should their response be?
Well, in most cases, a photo ID is not required for voters in Illinois. There's two cases where it might be, and that's if you registered to vote and you're voting for the first time and you registered to vote by mail and we weren't able to verify any of your ID information against the Secretary of State's database. In that case, we'll ask you to show ID. The second case would be if you're already a registered voter and you've signed the book, but your signature doesn't match what you provided when you registered, in the judgment of the election judge, at that point, they're supposed to ask for ID.
And I mean, Gordy, as you, both of you were saying that you, whether or not things like this happen, I wonder, you must have very specific provisions set up to try to prevent discrimination or intimidation at the polls. How do you guys ensure that?
We address it explicitly when we train all of our election judges. So every election judge is required to go through a four-hour training class every two years as they go through an election cycle. And that's one of the things that we explicitly discuss. And the overriding theme of our election judge training is that we are there to provide a service to the voters in Champaign County, and we want that service to be akin to an excellent retail customer service experience like you'd get at Starbucks or McDonald's. And so if you ask a voter for ID and it seems like they're surprised by that, explain to them why you're asking for the ID. And, you know, the kindness and the consideration and the explanation addresses 99% of any issues that folks have with being asked for an ID occasionally when it does happen.
Kathy, do you do that training as well in McLean?
Oh, yes. And the other thing, too, that people should remember, or hopefully shows like yours are very helpful in getting the word out. The Republican and Democratic judges are your neighbors, your friends, your relatives. Will you get an occasional cranky one? Maybe, but not very often. They take their jobs so seriously, and they attend this 4 to 5 hour training that's required. And it's just kind of like a juror, because they are sworn in by the courts. A juror seated on the jury takes that responsibility so serious. They are so proud. And remember, you've got other folks watching you as well. So the discrimination, we're fortunate in Central Illinois, just with some great people and raised right. And I'm not saying that never happens. It's never happened with us. And the other election judges, quite frankly, if it happens, that judge will never work again, and they will be the first to report it back to us.
Well, and that's what, if a voter wanted to make a complaint against an election judge, how would they do that? Would they do that in the polling? Would you do that when you at the voting booth?
So in Champaign County, it's relatively easy to get a hold of us. You can call us, email us, visit our website. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. And after elections, we will gather feedback. We will explicitly ask voters and election judges provide us with feedback. We aggregate it, compile it, look for themes. And if we get feedback that a specific judge hasn't been doing a job, hasn't been providing the excellent customer service we're looking for, we won't use them in future elections.
And that has that ever happened?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Kathy, same process for you, Wally McLean?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, we, a voter might be hesitant to report a problem to the election authority, thinking like, well, they're not going to do anything about it, or it wouldn't have happened in the first place. And we encourage, you have that opportunity to contact the Attorney General's office, contact our state's attorney's office, take the names of the judges, and then it will be investigated once you turn those in. But always, yeah, we do the same thing as Gordy does. We have a suggestion sheet in all of our binders for the judges also, and they can kind of confidentially write us or email us any problems that they want to report and don't want anybody else to know about, and we keep that confidential. And we're like Gordy, that person will not be asked back again, no way, no how.
Quick question for you, both of you guys, just about a minute left. Kathy, I know you've said there's about 15,000 early votes cast in McLean County. What percentage, what were you thinking about in terms of turnout? Are you expecting a heavy turnout on Tuesday?
Well, I was going to try to guess earlier on, but it's totally a wild guess. I still think it's going to be a high turnout. Normally, every 4 years, it's 75% to 80% turnout here, and I think we're going to see at least that. And we are up to, including City of Bloomington, we're getting close to, I think, 25,000 now as of today, early voters.
We've got a caller if we could go to really quickly. If he could just, Tim, go ahead really quickly. We've got about 15 seconds. Tim, are you there?
Yeah.
We've got about 15 seconds to make your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just shocked to hear the elected officials dismiss the previous caller's story about being discriminated against. And then they go on to say that they take complaints very seriously.
Okay, thanks for that comment. We are, we've got to take a break, but I want to give you guys both time to respond to that. So if you can just hold on here when we take a break, and both of you can respond to that. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
You're listening to The 21st. We're talking about voting ahead of Tuesday's election. We've been talking about voting, early voting. We have McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael on the line with us from McLean County in studio with me in Urbana. Gordy Holton is the Champaign County Clerk. We had a caller just before the break, Tim in Urbana. He said that he was disappointed and shocked that the earlier story about discrimination at the polls was dismissed. And just before we end this conversation, really wanted to give both of you a chance to respond to that. Kathy, let's start with you.
Well, I think he misunderstood. It wasn't dismissed at all. There was a question, because you have Republican and Democratic judges there, of a judge wearing a political shirt. It simply isn't allowed. And it's certainly any accusation like that should be brought to the Attorney General's office and our offices, and they, if people don't think the election authorities will follow up, the Attorney General's office surely would.
Mm-hmm. And Gordy, to the point of the shirt and the photo ID, how would you respond?
Well, it's not that we dismiss the complaint of discrimination. We take that very seriously. And if a voter has a complaint, contact our office or law enforcement with information about where they voted and when they voted, and we can do an investigation and speak with the judges. And we're happy to do that. We want to continually improve our service. But the details provided in the story about how two consecutive elections there was an election judge wearing a campaign shirt for one candidate or another sort of makes me doubt the story entirely.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, thank you both for joining us. You guys both have information on your websites. We're going to send out all of that information, both from the hotline, from the nonpartisan Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, as well as Champaign County, McLean County. We're going to have all of that up on our website by the end of the program. Both of you, busy time for you. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Kathy Michael, Gordy Holton. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You're listening to The 21st.
Cielito lindo, vienen bajando.
On Fridays, we like to talk to musicians from all across Illinois. This weekend, the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival is happening. One band's playing this weekend that has roots that go farther than most. The Celito Lindo family band is made up of a father and his kids. As you just heard, a mix of mariachi folk music. We're joined on the phone now by Juan Lucero, the founder and father of Celito Lindo family. Also on the phone with us are two of his sons, Miguel and Carlos, who play in the band. They're in Chicago right now. They're going to be in Urbana tomorrow for their performances. Juan, Miguel, Carlos, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Hello. Good morning, Nyla.
Good morning. Juan, let's start with you. Where did the idea of starting a family band come from?
It grew into music for, I love music for my whole life.
You know what, Juan, we're having a hard time getting a hold of you. Miguel, let me go to you while we figure out what's going on with your dad's line. Miguel, when did you start playing with your dad and siblings in the band? When did you first start playing with your dad and siblings in the band?
Oh, well, I actually started playing and singing with my dad when he started playing with my older brother, Diego. They used to practice songs just for fun in the garage. And then I would just sit on the steps and watch them. And then I decided to join them. And soon I learned to play ukulele, then guitar, and now I play trumpet.
Wow. And how old are you, Miguel?
I'm 13 now.
You're 13. So how many years, what age did you start singing with your dad?
Probably like professionally when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. Yeah.
Okay. And Carlos, are you 10?
Yes, I am 10 right now.
You're 10, and what do you play?
I play the guitar.
You play the guitar. Okay. So, Juan, you have 7 kids, not all of them officially performing in the band. How does that work? How many kids are in the band? How often are they involved?
Well, let's see. So we have 5 of the children are officially in the group now. That's my 4 oldest sons and my oldest daughter, Lilia. And as far as the other children, they're kind of just, we consider them just to be musicians in training, ready to jump on whenever they have the motivation and the attention span to, you know, sit in for a whole song at least.
And where did this whole idea of starting a family band come from?
Well, it just kind of, you know, happened because I've been a musician my whole life. And when the kids were born, I just shared music with them. I just sang with them. We played and had a good time. And one day I noticed that my oldest son, Diego, he was probably about 3, 3.5 years old, and I noticed that he could sing all the words to a song, and he enjoyed it. And I said, hey, why don't you come and play with my adult group? We were called Los Primos. And so he did one song, and that was the start of it. After that, it was just, you know, building it ever since then.
And do you teach, so the kids have lessons? How does this work? Or do you guys, how often do you practice together?
Well, generally speaking, I want to say it's mostly a practical life experience, you know, as far as performing. Like I mentioned earlier with my son Diego, as soon as he knew a song, I said, come on, let's go do a song. And we've been performing people. So I'll be honest and say that we probably play more in front of people than we actually rehearse by ourselves.
Carlos, so, Carlos, you're 10. Do you like performing in front of other people? Does it freak you out at all, or is it fun?
It's fun at the beginning, like when I first started playing, I got a lot nervous because it's like you're standing in front of a whole crowd. You don't know what to do. It's kind of hard to explain. Like you're standing in front of a whole crowd. Everyone's looking at you. They're expecting music to come out of your mouth, and it feels really good. But at the same time, when you begin to do it, it can be nervous, but then I started getting used to it. So then I kind of started adapting to it, and then finally I wasn't like nervous anymore. It started becoming like more fun, and like now I'm not even nervous anymore. I'm glad to share my talent with the other people.
Right. And what do you like about being in the band then?
I like that I get to sing in front of a bunch of people. And I like working together with my siblings. It's really funny, but you got to pay attention to like, the beat and everything, and you can't be like dozing off. So, yeah.
Yeah, you really got to pay attention. That's a good point, Carlos. I bet it teaches you a lot of skills on paying attention to things. Miguel, how about you? Because you're getting older now. You're 13. Do you want to keep playing music as you go through high school?
Yes, definitely. I feel like I'm not usually like a loud person. And trumpet kind of gives me like a voice. Or like lets me be loud, like how loud I want.
Oh, that's great. And, well, listen, Let's do this. Can we play another song so we can take a listen to another piece of music that you guys have done? This is, again, the Cielito Family Band. This is De Colores. That's part of De Colores from the Cielito Family Band. We're talking with Juan Lucera, two of his children from the band. It's part of a new album that they all recently recorded. They're going to be playing tomorrow at the CU Folk and Roots Festival in downtown Urbana. Two shows. We're talking to them right now from their home in Chicago. Carlos, first of all, Miguel, was that you playing the trumpet there? You said you like that the trumpet gives you a voice. Was that you?
Yes, it was.
Wow, that was great. So, Carlos, I know you recorded, Juan, I know you recorded album live together in one room. You're welcome.
Yes.
By doing that, do you feel like recording it live in a room, there's probably something special there that wouldn't have been if you tracked the album maybe individually and had them play their parts separately, I imagine?
Yeah, most definitely. The way, like I was telling you earlier about our and kind of in front of people, that's basically how we play the music. So we're used to having each other, hearing each other, seeing each other, so that you get that feeling. And I just knew that it wouldn't work at this time to track it individually. I think it would just lose that feeling. We wouldn't have that visual communication. So we picked a church here in Chicago that has beautiful acoustics, and we all were just pacing each other kind of in a big circle with all the mics. And it was a very, very fun time.
Carlos, I have a question for you. I know last week you all received an invitation from the TV show America's Got Talent to try out for the show. What was your reaction when your dad told you that you're going to be doing that?
Well, it was kind of like hard to believe that we've gotten this far in life.
Sure. Miguel, what about you?
I was like, I felt like it was like we had just, like, we've done some pretty cool stuff, like played for the WNBA and been on TV on Chicago Tonight, but I felt like it was just like a big leap and that it could open like some really big opportunities for us. And I was literally like myself. I'm not even joking. I was like jumping all around the house.
Okay, that makes sense. I know you guys, you played the national anthem at the Chicago Sky game last year. You're mentioning that. Juan, the songs that you play are traditional. A lot of it is traditional folk, Mexican folk music. How important is it for you to be passing this on to your family?
Oh, super, super important. You know, I mean, it's...
Juan, it looks like we lost you there. Miguel, let me just ask you one quick question. For you, I mean, are you interested in, is it for you as a 13-year-old kid, you know, Chicago kid, why is this music so important to you?
I think it's important because it lets me, like, since I have a really large family, we all have, like, a lot of different things about each other, and it helps. It's like one big thing that we have in common, and I can like play with them, and we get to play to different places and experience different, like eat different foods, experience like new stuff, and meet new people, and it's really fun.
That's 13-year-old Miguel Lucero. We've been talking to him, to his 10-year-old brother Carlos, to his dad Juan. Together, they're part of the Cielito Lindo family. They are going to be, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area this weekend, you can catch them at the CU Folk and Roots Festival. They're playing twice at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. The shows are at noon and at 2:15. Thank you for joining us, guys. Let's listen to one last song from the family.
Thank you, Nana.
All right. Thank you.
Nyla Boodoo, The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Cielitos negros, cielito lindo.